So I am speaking again tonight, and it's not because I know better than my two friends there. It's just because they love my French accent, so that's why I'm speaking again tonight. I am teaching meditation. It is not because I'm so interested in Buddhism. I am interested in life, and sometimes Buddhists can bring some clarity in my exploration about a way to discover some aspect of life. And in this sense, maybe I can be interested in Buddhism, but the main interest is in life. And that's certainly what is the most important. Yet Buddhism sometimes can bring some interesting, not only Buddhism, of course, but that can bring any tradition sometimes bring some interesting light, interesting way of seeing life. And if Buddhism is still meaningful in some sense, 2,500 years later, it is because the question that he asked in his quest, I think, were basic question about life. Were not speculation. He was not so much interested into the tradition of his time. Tradition of his time was recorded in the Vedas, in the holy texts of India. And he was not so much interested in that. What he wanted to discover was life, its meaning, and maybe also the possibility of freedom. So rather than looking for some kind of solution or dream-like situation in a future paradise, what he really wanted to see is what is the human condition. In all its aspect, not trying to avoid any aspect of human condition. And sometimes some people may see the Buddhist tradition as pessimistic, but I think on the contrary, the Buddha attitude was very ambitious. He did not try to inquire into the nature condition of a human being just in order to be sad about it, but his main interest and reason for this inquiry is to find a freedom from it. He said, is it all that there is to human condition, the limitation that we meet, the conditioning that there is, that we know that we live in our life, is it the last word about the human existence, the human conditioning? Maybe there is some way that we can be not so limited, not conditioned by our human condition. So it was very ambitious to really look for freedom. Now we may wonder, did he succeed or not? Well, we explore that, and not only by reading text, because the text of every tradition anyway said that everybody succeeded, so that not so much by reading text, but in our own practice. And sometimes by small experience, we can see there is a greater space for freedom when we start to open to the reality of our existence. So we try to explore in each situation where is freedom for us to be found. So what he discovered, of course, considering the human condition, that it is very limited by birth and death. So his great question was a question of birth and death, but also the other limitation of not wanting, not meeting what one wants, and wanting and meeting what one doesn't want. It's not because we want to be nice and rich, and that is so easy that it will happen. It's not because we like to live long time with our friends and our family that it always happens. Sometimes there is separation. So we see that just a wish for this and wish to avoid that is not enough. We cannot just decide of everything. So where is there freedom to be found? If we see in the life of the Buddha, which we don't know very much about it, the life story of the Buddha were written nearly 1,000 years after his death. So it's certainly a lot of mythology about it. But it doesn't matter. We are not looking here for historical fact. What we are looking here for is some description that may be meaningful for us in our own journey. That's what is interesting. And what we see that the Buddha's first reaction before he was a Buddha is, in a sense, he engaged into a negation of life. He refused life, and he lived not eating nearly anything, and living a very difficult life. It is said that he was up to eating only one grain of rice a day, which seems not so much, especially if I compare to what I'm eating every day. But so there's something in his first reaction to life is a negation. And he got so weak, he found out that that was not a solution. It's not by negating life that one finds freedom. And there were, at his time, many people that thought that will be the way to freedom, to really negate and negate the body and make the body suffer. Then we understood that was not the way, and that was not the way also just to live a life of pleasure, because sometimes there are elements like old age and sickness that we have no control. So he saw that to negate life by not eating or not wanting really to live it, and another way just to lost oneself in the pleasure that are very actually fragile. So those were not solution for freedom, for human existence. That was not a way to really connect with the deepest meaning. So what is so amazing is that we have here a sage or founder of a religion or whatever that is really grounding his own research in the most common aspect of daily life, in the most common aspect in the human condition. Not trying to escape it, to see it completely. And the first aspect of his teaching, which is called the First Noble Truth, is the truth of suffering. To really see it clearly, he said the first truth, the truth of suffering, has to be seen. Not to be covered, not to be avoided. And actually, in this first indication, in his first teaching to see the suffering clearly, I think the whole Buddhist tradition is just there, to see the suffering clearly. Doesn't mean that we then will be depressed because we see the human condition. That's not what is meant. But to see it clearly, to see deeply how it is, what is structuring suffering. And in this way, we can see also, if we understand what is structuring suffering, we understand also maybe how we cannot be conditioned by and limited by those aspects. In the life of the Buddha, before awakening, when he saw that to negate life and negate his body was not the way, decided to eat again to get some strength. Then he went, he said, under the tree of awakening, and he said he was attacked by the army of Mara, a way of expressing that as he was sitting there in meditation, he had practiced for many years, 7 years meditation, so he had a lot of practice, certainly a lot of tranquility, of power of concentration, very deep. But it is so interesting if we see the process of meditation. Why at this time suddenly was he attacked by the army of Mara? The army of Mara is just doubt and desire and anger and aversion and hatred, all that. The army of Mara. So how is it that after so many years of deep concentration, suddenly all those, and it seems that they arose nearly all at the same time when we read the text, army seems to so huge. So this mythology here is far as interesting with respect to our meditation. It is because he was able to meet this army, to meet his inner conflict, his inner difficulties, his difficult emotion, because he was able to meet them and to see them, then he could awaken. It is at this time, exactly when he was able to see them, that he was free. And the text said very clearly, he said, he sees them, he recognizes them, he does not defeat his enemies, to keep this vocabulary, does not defeat them as a warrior, a kung fu man or something like that. He said, the arrows of Mara were transformed into flowers, which means that the negativity that were in himself, anger, hatred, lust, and so on, were transformed into flowers, not defeated, not negated, not repressed, because he saw them very clearly. Suddenly they lose their power of conditioning, they lose the power of bringing suffering, they just transform into something very nice and very sweet. But it is by meeting that that he could awaken. And in a sense, the fact that after so many years of deep meditation and concentration, they arose, while they did not arise before, it means that certainly at this time his meditation was more open, that he opened his mind to be able to let anything arise that was within himself and not to try to avoid it by a deep concentration. Suddenly he opened himself to experience the life within himself, then he could see it clearly, and then he could be free from their conditioning, from their conditioning power. Jung expressed that, he said, enlightenment is not going to the light, it is bringing the light into darkness. So in this sense, in our meditation, is not just to hope for peacefulness and calm, although that is quite pleasant, and we agree, and sometimes it's so nice, or it would be so nice to experience calmness and tranquility and joy. We understand that, but that's not what meditation deeply is about. It's about bringing this light into the darkness, into what is troubling us, what is conditioning us. And when we can see that clearly, then we can see the possibility for freedom. So when not avoiding to face suffering, what the Buddha discovered is that it is not the reality that is conditioning us. It is not the reality that is a cause of suffering. The reality of having a body and all the conditions that are linked with that is not the reality that is bringing suffering to humankind. It is not the reality that is conditioning us. It is confusion about reality. And that is very important to understand. If it were reality that is conditioning us, that is limiting us, then there could be no escape, there could be no freedom. We cannot not free ourselves from reality. Only by dreaming, then it's a way of escaping. So if reality was what is questioning us, what is limiting us, what is making us suffer, there would be no way that can go beyond suffering, that can go beyond the conditioning. So if freedom is possible, if we can go beyond conditioning, it means that we have a part, we have a responsibility in it, so that by changing our own way of seeing, then we can be free. We cannot change reality, but we can change our way of seeing. So we found out that what is making the reality difficult, conditioning and suffering, is by we are mistaken with respect to reality. We see it in a wrong way, and this wrong way of seeing then is putting us like in a jail. But the jail in which we are placed is not a concrete jail that we need to find some way out by, I don't know, breaking the walls or finding the key to the door. the jail in which we found ourselves, condition, is just due to our confusion. It is our confusion that is creating this jail in which we are stuck. Then, only then, is freedom possible. So we have to explore in our life, in every aspect of our life, to see how, through our confusion, we are seeing this situation, that this situation is conditioning us and is bringing suffering. Not by trying to avoid it or transform, so to speak, but to seeing it clearly. So ignorance in the Buddhist tradition is not to know, not to know the name of the street here, not to know the name of the Arabic village. That's not what it is about. So ignorance in the Buddhist tradition is imagining something that does not really exist this way. It's an imagination that is confused, imagination that we take for reality. That is what ignorance is about. Not knowing, it doesn't matter not to know. Well, I don't know the name of most of you, I should say. Well, I don't say also I'm not ignorant, I'm still ignorant, but it's not by learning the name of each one of you, because in Israel there are many people, and the name I have a bit difficulty. Even if I were to learn all the names, I don't think to lead me closer to awakening. So it's not about that. It's seeing that how we create a mistaken reality in which suddenly we are trapped. To see that through our meditation. And for that we need to be willing to experience whatever is arising. Because as long as we want to transform it, we don't allow ourselves to see it very clearly. When we want to transform in our meditation some experience, a bit pain here, a bit sadness, I want to transform it, and we understand, seems fair. But by doing that, we don't understand where the confusion is about those conditioning experiences. It is by being, like we see the example in the life of the Buddha, by seeing very clearly the armies of Mara, his negative emotions, his confusion, by seeing it clearly that he freed himself from. So for us, if we try to change every experience that is arising in our meditation, that is unpleasant, sadness, impatience, anxiety, desire, or whatever, if we try to change them, we are not trying to understand where there is confusion about them. And then we cannot really free ourselves from that bondage. It will be always by being in the experience, in a deeper sense, that we will see through. And the same experience that seems so conditioning, that seems such a burden, suddenly we can experience them as flowers, in the mind, only as a quality of the mind, not as a burden anymore. But that we need to experience by ourselves, not just by believing what a text may say or what a teacher may say. That will help. It's by a small experience in our meditation that little by little we'll discover something very simple, sometimes a very simple difficulty that we were trying always to push away. I think one simple example is sleepiness. It's sleepiness, and I try to feel more awake and try to fight against sleepiness, so I don't understand what is sleepiness about. Sleepiness is an obstacle to my meditation. But if I try to explore what is a sleepy mind, what is this quality of mind that it can be sleepy? It's something amazing. The mind can suddenly just make itself sleepy, like resting on itself. So what is this quality of a sleepy mind? When in our meditation we start to see that very clearly, we see that a sleepy mind is as clear as an awakeful mind. That if we cling to the sleepiness, then it seems it's dull, then it's tiredness, we don't see clearly. So the first point is to see that I don't need to consider that as an obstacle. If I see sleepiness as an obstacle, then I will see agitation as an obstacle, then everything will be an obstacle. And therefore I need in my meditation always to try to bring something else. Then I am never facing what's happening now. And what the Buddha said, The first truth, the truth of suffering, is to be known. So we need to experience it, to be willing to experience it in a very clear way. We may understand meditation is about inner peace. It seems to make sense, and why not? We can express it this way. But we also see that this word peace is a vocabulary of military type of vocabulary, and there are different types of peace. I have no reference to what's happening in Israel, of course. I'm speaking in a general way. But what we have, we can have peace which is just a ceasefire. Ceasefire. Or we can have a true peace where there's really everything is at peace. So in the meditation, what does it mean? A ceasefire is when we try to concentrate on one type of experience. I could try to be really, really close to the way I'm breathing, and then the difficulties in me do not arise. So I don't feel there is no sadness, there is no anger, nothing is arising because I really found a shelter, I found a way just to be with the way I'm breathing. It's very peaceful. That is a ceasefire. The problem is not solved, but for nowadays it is quite peaceful. That's one way to bring inner peace. But there's another way to bring inner peace, which is to realize, I'm speaking within oneself, to realize that the inner conflict, when we start to see them for what they are, we can realize that the two parts of the inner conflict are nothing but the mind. So we cannot oppose one part on the other. If we consider them as if they were objective realities, and we have this aspect against this aspect, they are opposing, and then it can be so painful, this inner conflict. But in the meditation, we'll see each aspect of this inner conflict as being nothing but a quality of the mind at this time. They have the same nature of the mind. And then this inner conflict will be seen through for what it is. And then there will be true inner peace. And that is a work of wisdom. That is what we're exploring here. So sometimes in our meditation, we do meet difficulties, emotions, and so on. They are not a mistake in meditation. I know sometimes we believe it would be much better if they will not be here. It was so peaceful before. Now I start to feel, I don't know, some anxiety or sadness or impatience. It's nice to be without. Yes, it is true. But this is an opportunity when emotions are rising. It is an opportunity to understand really what is conditioning me. And when I see that clearly, I can be free from that. Not because I negate it, not because I destroy it, because I recognize it for what it is. So that's why the exploration of the first noble truth, of the truth of suffering, naturally leads to all the other aspects. Because when we are willing really to open ourselves to experience that sadness, sleepiness, anxiety, when we are willing not to push it away, but to experience it deeply, then we can understand what it is about. And we see that it has in itself no power to really trouble us, to condition us. Again, it's not a matter of belief. It's really to experience little by little in our practice. In one sutra, the Buddha expressed that, I think, clearly. Again, that's why it is important to explain that in one practice. It's not about believing in the text, in the sutras. It's about discovering it for ourselves in our practice. And taking this presupposition at least, something to explore. In one sutra, the Sutra of the Two Arrows, where the Buddha said, an awakened disciple, somebody advanced on the spiritual path, and a common person, both do experience difficulties, they can experience suffering, both of them. So he said, then what is the difference? Not to dream that if one were advanced in a spiritual path, there is no problem anymore. He said, no, both are experiencing difficulties, but what is the difference then? And he said that the person confused when experiencing suffering is looking for some kind of way out by looking for more pleasure, for escaping and looking for pleasure, satisfaction in other things. And this person complained, he said, beat his chest and lament about the suffering. I think maybe seeing oneself as a victim of the situation, victim of life, you know. And this person is really identifying with that. And he said it's like this person having being hit by a first arrow, then receive a second arrow exactly at the same place. The second arrow that comes here is due to the reaction that is based on confusion. Then that is bringing more suffering, and that is bringing all this conditioning. While the more wise person, so to speak, when experiencing suffering does not lament, doesn't beat his chest, doesn't complain, he doesn't look for a solution in escaping in sensual pleasure, because he sees it for what it is. He does not identify with it. He recognizes it exactly for what it is. Therefore, he does not receive a second arrow. So the difference here we see is in the reaction, what we do with the situation. Are we then suddenly wallowing into a situation of suffering and complaining, or are we finding the freedom in the situation itself? The freedom is to be found in bondage, not outside. And that's why we need to really experience what's happening. If freedom were to be found outside, it means that we will need always to get rid of so many things. But when we found the freedom inside bondage, we found that in the situation, whatever it is, there is always for us a disposition, a way of being that is completely free, that is not being limited by the condition that arising. So what it means in our practice, it means in any situation, in any experience at any time, there is always a possibility for freedom. There is always a way of being in this experience that is a way of being free. Now, it is true, sometimes the emotion can be so strong, somebody being really in deep anxiety, it will be not wise for the teacher or advisor to say, there is freedom to be found there, just find the freedom there. That will be at the same time unkind and unwise. We know sometimes there are difficulties we need to practice little by little to have this capacity to open ourselves in a balanced way to more and more deeper difficulties. And in this sense, we need to know how to deal with deeper difficulties. Yet, in any situation, there is always a position of freedom. Sometimes it's difficult for us to find it, but it's always there. Because it's the confusion that is conditioning us. It is not the situation. Only then is there a possibility for freedom. If we were completely limited and conditioned by the situation themselves, then what we would need to do is to try to get the best situation. We'll try to find shelter against the rain. Again, there are many things difficult to find shelter. Again, old age. One can try whatever one wants, put all the cream one wants, but I think it, you know, it doesn't last for so long. There's always a time where old age will take over, or sickness. You know. Can be careful, but so we cannot protect ourselves against life. And it will be absurd. But what we can do is find this position where we find that freedom is possible. But to say that there is confusion in a way of relating to life, I mean, it's quickly said, we have to explore that, what does it mean? There's a confusion, or ignorance is a, imagination is not just not to know, so we need to explore that a little bit more precisely. There is a confusion between what we think and what we experience. In such a way that finally we're experiencing what we think rather than what we're experiencing. So one way we have spoken about that in hearing, for example. If I hear the car, or I hear the bird, see that here there's a confusion, because what I'm hearing actually is a sound. I'm hearing, what we can hear is only sound. You cannot hear a car. If you can hear a car, then when the car is not driving, you can hear it. But try to hear the car, you know, I hear the car. No, so you hear the noise of the car. You hear the sound of the bird. And that makes an important difference. In our experience, when there is hearing, if I just try to be connected with what's happening. So first, there is I am hearing the car, let's say. I am hearing the car. The car, I think the road is somewhere there, going on the road there. And so there is a construction. I'm not really hearing what I'm hearing. I'm hearing what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that is a car. So when I get closer to the experience, just of hearing, I don't grasp, I don't cling to I don't cling to the image of the car or the name car. I just try to be more interested in just the experience of hearing. So what is this experience? If you like, what is the sound like? So I'm really giving myself completely, fully to hearing this sound, with all its fluctuation, all the richness of the sound. And then I will discover suddenly that there is no construction, that what I'm experiencing here is the fullness of my being. Fullness of my being because I'm not in this construction of I am hearing the car. I'm not negating anything. I just try to be more interested in the experience itself, the experience of hearing. As I've mentioned already in one or two groups, the musician John Cage said, he said that he wanted to free sound, that it can be itself. Yeah. So that the sound is not the sound of a car, but the sound is a sound. So that one can really fully be interested in the sound for the sound, not the sound for the car. The sound for the sound, not for the bird. Not because we want to become musician, just because it's a way that we will meet ourselves in this experience of hearing. Then there is a fullness, there is no confusion at this time. We discover already that there is another dimension in our experience. That we are not split, that there is a fullness of oneself. We can also experience that in seeing, and I think it's important to explore it. It's also quite subtle. I see, you know, I see the trees, or I see the hall, and I see many people in the hall, so there is this sense, I see, and what I see is placing here. But if I come to the experience of seeing, I see the experience of seeing is happening here. The experience of seeing is not happening here. It is an interpretation. When you come into the meditation hall, then you see the meditation hall. But every step, your sight is different. Yet you have the sense that you see exactly the same thing. So there is an interpretation, and then we believe, we see what we think. What I think is a meditation hall, which is correct, hopefully. But suddenly this image, this concept of meditation hall is such in such a way that I'm not in the expense of seeing. In many ways we can question the seeing. If you bend your head like that or like that, well, if you had a camera, you will see the image down, but I look like that and you all look straight. So, well, seeing like that, you should be all bent, but strange. Luckily, you did not all bend this way, because I will have been a little bit surprised. But so it just means that we are interpreting. No problem, and that's good, we can interpret what we are seeing. But if you want to come to a much deeper knowledge of ourselves, not much deeper of awareness of ourselves, then we can be just with the expense of seeing. That it's happening exactly where I am. And suddenly I discover, when I see the hall and I see all the people there, there's a split in my experience. There's a notion of I here, a notion of something that is being seen, split that's happening there. When I'm just in the experience of seeing, suddenly there is a fullness of being here. What is being realized in this experience is the fullness of being. It does not negate that there is a seeing happening, but it does not elaborate, does not translate into concept the experience. So in any of our experience, in our meditation or in the walking, if we try to stay as close as possible to the experience, then we can start to discover another way to be in the world, at times that bring another way of being in the world. It is also the same with our pain. I feel pain in my knee, and then I have pain in my knee, something that is seems so solid, but when I try to really feel the sensations there in this part of the body, I may start to feel it, and then suddenly realize it's just some kind of vibration or heat. So it's not I am experiencing pain. Suddenly there's just this experience of a consciousness of heat or of vibration. And what I'm discovering in this experience is the fullness of my being. Again, not because I've been negating anything, but I've been more interested in resting just in the experience before I give it a meaning. So for perception is maybe easy to understand how we go about, and that also why our meditation is organized this way. We just try to be as simple as possible, to stay as intimate as we can with the experience. Again, it's not a negation of the interpretation, it's not a negation of what we can construct, but we want to discover what is our experience of the world before we impose a meaning on it, in a more innocent way, in a more intimate way. We can always, and we will always, of course, bring meaning. We need to do that. We need to see this. We need to hear that. If you drive a car or if you walk in the street of a city, it's better you understand that the noise is a car. If you're just hearing the noise so interesting, then you will not be here with us for the next retreat. So it's better at this time to be able to recognize it. That's not the question, that we'll lose our ability to understand what an experience means. We just want to discover something more intimate about ourselves, what's happening before this interpretation. And there we'll also find the power of conceptualization, and also how much solidity we give to that. Now there are areas, of course, where it's also clear that we give a reality of something that has not so much reality. For example, memories. I may remember something from, I don't know, last year or holidays or something like that, and I may get fascinated or sad or whatever. But it means that I give to this memory, in a sense, the statue I give to what is being remembered is confused with the same reality as what can be seen. Because the memory is gone. I mean, what we refer to is something that does not exist anymore. Yet, as I give it some reality, then it can start to trouble me. Or the same with the future. When I start to anticipate, and then I can start to be anxious. Doesn't mean that we don't need to anticipate, and we don't need to remember. We need to remember and maybe to take some wisdom from what we've been experiencing. But the fact that we are losing ourselves and giving reality to past and future, that is a deep confusion. Then it seems that we exist in duration. And suddenly any experience is seen in duration with a burden of duration. And all the stress comes from this duration. I think I've mentioned this afternoon, when you try every instant of your meditation to meditate for 45 minutes, this is very difficult. It's very heavy in 1 second to experience 45 minutes of meditation. This is very difficult. any difficulty that is happening, we have the sense of time, then it's a burden. Any difficulty, however great it can be, experienced for one instant only, it's not really a great burden. So immediately as we give it length of time, then suddenly this is a burden. And in our meditation, sometimes when we start to be tuning in to every experience just in this instant, we see that the duration is something that we are creating. It's not a mistake, but we are creating here and does not need to be created. And then we can experience everything with a lightness because it has no before, no after. Before and after is a thought that is arising in the mind. So amat we can condition us by this notion of temporality, giving it too much solidity. But temporality is a construct that is helpful, very helpful for our life. But when we believe that it's that solid, concrete reality, then it starts to be a burden. Then we're in this jail of temporality. Then I have time or I have no time, but can anybody show where time is? You know, I have time, where in your pocket or where that time that you have, you know. Maybe in your agenda, you have time. Oh, look, I have time there because you have a long, you know, few lines without anything. So time is not something one can have or not. It's something that we construct. I have asked you this afternoon, try to do a movement in past and future. But I think nobody succeed. Maybe I was mistaken, but nobody succeed. So it also shows, it's striking way that we don't have time. Everything is happening just at one instant. Time is a temporality, is a construct, useful one, but if we give reality, then it become a burden. Can you imagine if you get in the morning in your office and in your job and you have so much to do? I have so much to do today. And if you want to try to do everything just in this instant, well, that's really a burden, of course. But if you do one thing after another, maybe at the end of the day, maybe you have accomplished everything. But if in the morning you want to accomplish everything in this instant, doesn't work. So we can only experience one instant after another. I have quoted already a few times St. Augustine saying that if nobody asks me, I know what it is. If somebody asks me, I don't know. You are speaking about time. And if somebody asks me what it is, I don't know. The past has gone, the future is not yet here, and in between there is no space for anything. So when in our meditation we question temporality, not mentally, not intellectually, but our own being here every instant, without clinging to that which has gone, without anticipating with that could come or that I wish like it would come, but just being tuning in to each experience. This way of being just in tune to each experience, without notion of temporality, here we experience already a great freedom. We can see that the burden of temporality, when we take it for some solidity or concrete reality, it's a great burden. And that's not something we need to convince ourselves. It's something we need to explore in our practice. Just every instant, can I just be what's here? And I'll see that any anticipation gives a sense of duration, any remembering or clinging to a past experience also gives a sense of duration. As soon as we want in our meditation to transform and to improve, we fall into that. To improve, to transform something, it means that there is an anticipation and I fall into the notion of time and clinging to the notion of time. And I think that is something very, very clear. That if I can experience this being here in the fullness in each instant, it means that I'm not being led by the wish to transform, to improve, or to change anything. As soon as I fall into that, it means I'm refusing the reality that is here now. I'm refusing it, resisting it for some imaginary reality that is not here. And if we come to the first noble truth, to see suffering very clearly, or to see reality clearly. So it means not to transform it, and only then can we start to see it for what it is. outside this framework of I want to transform, to resist it, or wanting something else. So this very simple sensitivity about temporality, the sensitivity about not pushing away, about not trying to promote something, this attitude is easy to understand, although it may sneak in so often. But when we tune in to that in our practice, then I think we can start to discover the space of freedom. When there's nothing that is being pushed away, nothing that is we desire to bring in, when we don't comment into the present experience, just experiencing simply, in a sense, without any concept, then what the text says, it is what is called momentary nirvana, is momentary freedom. Just at this instant, the freedom is true freedom. We can experience that. So we have to be very aware of this, being willing to open to what is here now every instant, and not reacting, trying to transform it so that we can know it deeply for what it is. Then we are opening to the first truth, truth of suffering, although it's not always clear that it is suffering. And also we understand how by clinging it is painful. We also understand how there can be freedom. And we also understand the way to this freedom is by not pushing away, not by not clinging to bringing something, by not telling a story about what's happening. So in this sense, by the simple meditation at each instant, we can understand the Four Noble Truths. Truth of suffering, the origin, clinging to concept or pushing away, wanting to bring something, the freedom that can be experienced, and how that can happen by not buying into aversion, desire for something else, or confusion about what's happening. So that's why our practice is structured the way it is, in a very simple way. In a simple way, but that give us the opportunity to really find out what freedom is about. About life, and that not about, about Buddhism, it's about being present in each instant. I'll just quote a poem from Pessoa, this Portuguese writer, which I think is a very beautiful writer. He said, memory is a betrayal of nature. Memory is a betrayal of nature, like a negation of nature, if you like. Yesterday's nature is not nature. Yesterday's nature is not nature. What was is nothing. Remembering is not seeing. I'll make a clear distinction there. Remembering is not seeing. There's a clear distinction, which is not always clear in our life. Okay, so I try to bring in a very short, in a nutshell, a little bit the whole aspect of the Buddhist path. And I see now there's time for walking meditation. For how long? Half an hour? Okay, 25 minutes for walking meditation and then another sitting.